how it was adorned with beautiful stones and gifts dedicated to God, Jesus said, "As for these things that you see, the days will come when not one stone will be left upon another. All will be thrown down." They asked him, "Teacher, when will this be, and what will be the sign that this is about to take place?" And he said, "Beware that you are not led astray. For many will come in my name and say, 'I am he,' and 'The time is near.' Do not go after them. When you hear of wars and insurrections, do not be terrified, for these things must take place first, but the end will not follow immediately." Then he said to them, "Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes and in various places famines and plagues, and there will be dreadful portents and great signs from heaven. But before all this occurs, they will arrest you and persecute you. They will hand you over to synagogues and prisons, and you will be brought before kings and governors because of my name. This will give you an opportunity to testify. So make up your minds not to prepare your defense in advance, for I will give you words and a wisdom that none of your opponents will be able to withstand or contradict. You will be betrayed, even by parents and brothers, by relatives and friends, and they will put some of you to death. You will be hated by all because of my name, but not a hair of your head will perish. By your endurance, you will gain your souls." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
My brother is a year and a half older than me. For a number of years, as we were growing up, the assumption that people who saw us had was that we were twins, because we were about the same height and the same build. Both had blonde hair and blue eyes. But there came a point around 9, 10 years old where my brother became broader while I went this way. And in that wonderful sibling rivalry kind of way, when we were annoyed with each other, we came up with names for each other based on that physical appearance. My brother, who was known for being very heavy of foot, sort of a baby Huey, if you will, I became annoyed with him because he was stomping around one day and I called him a baby elephant. To which he retorted as he looked at me and said, "At least I don't look like a giraffe." And so from that point on, the giraffe has become my personal mascot. And when my wife and I started to date, she is 6'1", she decided to take on that mascot as well. And so we have giraffe images spread throughout our house, including what was on top of our wedding cake. We did not have the bride and groom sitting on the cake. We had two giraffes with their necks wrapped around each other on top of our wedding cake. So for whatever reason, on Thursday morning when I was out for my run, the cows in the pasture in the field where I was running by were shocked to see this giraffe-looking creature gasping for air as he went up a hill, wearing fluorescent yellow, As a result, one cow got spooked and started a stampede of over 50 cattle who went charging all the way across the pasture and into the barn. I am pleased to say that I have never, ever caused a stampede before. And so I'm adding to this to my resume of my accomplishments in life, that I caused a stampede. There was something in my presence that brought fear to that one cow, and as a result, led all of them running away. We must look at our own fears today. Those things that make our hearts ache when they happen, or that are causing our hearts to ache even at this moment as we are going through them, or those things that will cause that ache if something goes wrong in our lives. To some extent, that fear is personal, based on who we love, what we have become vulnerable to, what is important to us. And as you think within your own hearts, and if you're willing to be honest with yourself, you'll be able to name those fears. There are also the fears that happen as things go on around us. The ache in our hearts as we see the footage from the Philippines. Thousands of lives lost. The destruction, the crying out and weeping and the tears of those who are yearning for something to drink and something to eat. Yes, those kinds of things happen in this world as well. There will be wars, where one nation is aggressive against another. There will be wars within nations, where one ethnic group or religion, for the purpose of purity, tries to eradicate another group or religion. There will be earthquakes that cause the ground to shift under people's feet and bring down buildings and start frantic searches. There will be famines. There will be those pictures of children with flies walking over their face and in arms who are too weak to move their hands to shoo the fly away. And as there are these typhoons and wars and civil wars, as there are earthquakes and famines and plagues, so too will the temples come down. The religions will crumble. They will no longer be able to protect us from our fears. We all have religion. It's those things that we hold fast to, that we think that if we do, it'll keep the hard things at bay in our lives. Those rules of thumb by which we live. Those ways of doing things that we are convinced if we do it faithfully in the right way, we won't have to go through the pain. We won't have to struggle. We won't have to be afraid any longer. There are those who are so certain of their salvation that they long for the day when there is this great rapture, and some will be taken into heaven and the rest of us will be left behind. Pastor Kate, who served faithfully in this congregation for so many years, tells the story of her sister who works in an office in New York. And there was a member of the office staff who bought into the Left Behind series, hook, line, and sinker. you know, that image where the rapture happens and those taken into heaven, their clothes are neatly folded on their seats after they ascend into heaven. You know, if heaven is a bunch of people running around without their clothes on, no offense, that's not my image of heaven. So they decided one day, as they were all going for lunch, that after this coworker of theirs left for lunch, they'd each brought along an extra set of clothes. They folded them neatly, put them on their chairs, and left and didn't come back after lunch. There was sheer panic in the heart of this person when she realized the rapture had happened and she was the one that was left behind. Marketers offer us good religious objects, those things that if we have them, will help everything work better in our lives. And it's almost parable the way they present these products to us. They show someone looking forlorn and lost and helpless, and they don't know what to do, and then all of a sudden you put in front of them the great solution, whether that's a phone or a tablet or a cologne or a car, whatever the solution, and they all at once are convicted of their sin, and they know what they need to buy into in order to make it better. That's perhaps why even some of you will feel the need to go shopping on Thanksgiving Day. Worship that great God. It's the yearning that someone do something about the problems. That comes at people in different ways. For me, when I see things that aren't working, my frustration is geared at other people. That if other people would just do what they should do, things would work better. But equally challenging in our spiritual life is a demand that God do something. If someone would just do something, things would change. It's the belief that if our faith is strong enough and solid enough and we have no doubts, then everything will work out for us. It doesn't allow room for the richness and the depth of doubt in faith life. And quite frankly, brothers and sisters, if we are a congregation that's going to be open and receptive of those under the age of 40, we need to allow room for people to talk about their doubts. Whatever it is you think will make it work is in part your religion. And all of those religions are based on a longing, a desire that we don't have to experience the broken heart that comes from living with our fears. Read on Lancaster Online this week that, and it was in the paper a couple days later, that someone stole a backhoe. Okay, so this is obviously a high-speed chase. Drove the backhoe up 222. Gets better. Got onto the turnpike. Drove the backhoe all the way over to Route 100, which I believe leads you to Allentown and Macungie, until finally someone stopped him. And at first I ask, why didn't anyone realize that this was a stolen backhoe? But the more I thought about it, the more I realized if I'm driving down the turnpike, and there's a yellow tractor with flashing lights on it going down the side of the road, my conclusion is this: it's part of the road crew. It belongs there, so it must be okay. Too often with our own personal religions, because it looks right, sounds right, and seems to fit, we think it's the solution. But beware that you are not led astray For many will come in the name of Jesus and say, I am he, and the time is near. Do not go after them. Our salvation comes from God. The broadening of horizons, the opening of minds, the making room, expanding the pastures. Our salvation belongs to God. That opening of minds for people who think nothing more can happen in this difficult moment. It's a salvation that God offered to Noah and his family as they built that ark at the ridicule of everyone around them and brought them through the flood and safely to dry land. It's a salvation that was work among God's people living in bondage in Egypt, crying out for mercy under the weight of their oppression, that finally set free, could walk through the Red Sea on dry land and be led into the promised land. It's a salvation when Ezekiel looks at all of those dry bones that brings those bones back to life and raises up a new people. It's a salvation that takes God's people who've been in exile and have lost everything and brings them back to their promised land, back to their homes. And finally, it's that salvation that is shown to us in God's own Son, living, breathing flesh, incarnate here on the world, who dies like we die. But brothers and sisters, that's not the salvation. That this one who dies like we die is raised from the dead. As he has died, we too shall die, and we too shall live again. This Jesus is coming back. This Jesus who has ascended into heaven will return. We await the day that Christ returns. And until that day, our mission is to witness. Our mission is to testify. Our mission is to proclaim what God will do at the end of time. And it is your mission as much as it is my mission. It catches a glimpse of something other. Just a momentary glimpse of something other than this divisive, broken way that we go about looking at the problems in our world. But it's more than just catching a glimpse. It's having the courage and being willing to be vulnerable enough to speak it out loud. Say, I believe this is possible in part now, in fullness in the age to come. Take the risk to be vulnerable. To be ridiculed, to have the fear that comes putting a vision in front of others, to live with that fear and that anxiety, hoping that it will come true. It won't give you popularity. In fact, those who are closest to you may look at you and think there's something wrong with you. But our mission, this in-between time, is to proclaim the salvation of God. Amen.